the start of the Wintrust Business Lunch. And on Wednesdays, most Wednesdays that is, Terry Savage joins and takes over the entire show. And I mean that lovingly, Terry, as someone who was dancing just a moment ago. We've set the mood right here in the studio, and it's a big day. The Fed rate, look, it's kind of come down. I know a lot of people are like, so about, oh, is it going to be 25 or 50? For the vast majority of us, this particular move doesn't matter. It's the trajectory that's important, right?
It's the right turn, the about face, actually. Rates have been going up and up and up. I mean, but it was only a few years ago that rates were stuck around zero. So 3 or 4 years ago, it's about 3 years ago now, when they started raising rates, as they have, I remember doing a lot of shows where I introduced the concept of your bank is not raising rates on your CDs as quickly as the Fed is raising its, what let's just call them interbank rates that the professionals and the global money managers use. And so
the banks weren't passing it on to the customers.
They were not passing it on. And I got a lot of mileage sitting right here in the studio saying, here's how you buy 6 month treasury bills. The rates are set at auction every month. It's the IOUs of the US government. Huge global institutions bid on them. And those rates moved up much more quickly in response to the Fed's action than your CD rates. Now, this is really a critical moment because the Fed is going to cut rates. Let's not sit here and debate. The market's about 50-50 on whether it'll be a quarter or a half.
We'll find out soon enough.
We'll find out within the hour, and we can talk about what, why and what. But the fact that is important, I think, the feel I get for our listeners is, okay, so what happens to my rates now when the Fed starts cutting its rates? Now, you remember how the banks lagged all the way up. I was telling you could get 4% in T-bills and then 5%, and your CDs were still like 2.75 or 3.25. Watch this. At banks, the rates go up slowly, the rates they pay to depositors. But when the Fed starts cutting, they will cut more quickly.
So
CD will roll over and mature at a lower rate than you might even expect.
So when rates went up, the Fed took the elevator, the banks took the stairs.
Yeah.
Now the Fed will take the stairs down and the banks will take the elevator down.
Yeah, exactly. They will have an excuse to cut CD rates more quickly.
Okay.
All rates will come down. So here's a fact. The Fed is changing course. They've said, in effect, we've got inflation under control. Economy's showing some signs of weakness, but it's not a disaster.
Planes landed. Don't get up from your seat yet. We're not at the gate.
We're taxing to the gate.
Yeah,
right,
please keep seated. Yeah.
Very good analogy.
Thank you.
So, but here's what we know. So I was just looking at my charts on my phone. About a couple of months ago, I decided that those 6 month T-bills, which were yielding then of 5.5%, some of those came due.
Good stuff.
And I said, you know what? Let me just go back and look and see, because I looked on my account at Treasury Direct this morning. This was in April. So 2 year Treasury notes at the time were just about 5%, less than you could get in 6 month T-bills. But I thought, gee, I'm going to have my T-bills maturing and rolling over automatically. This is my chicken money. I don't move it because rates are down. Gosh, I lived with it when rates were 0.25%.
Right.
Let's keep this in mind, the mantra of the chicken money investor. I'm not so concerned about the return on my money as I am about the return of my money. So chicken money, you want to keep safe. You want to get the best available rate. The T-bills will still do that, but they'll be coming down. So I moved some of my T-bill money, maybe 20% of it, into 2 year treasuries.
Instead of the 6 month.
I think it was 4.98% at that 2 year auction.
So you were sacrificing the higher rate for 6 months to not have to then battle what will happen 6 months after that.
Exactly.
And then again.
Because I'm looking ahead and I'm seeing stuff will mature in October and November because I stagger them out. So now the 2 year treasury, just to give you some perspective.
Please.
The 2 year treasury, which I got just under 5%, you can call it 5%, today is yielding 3.6%, the 2 year. Where the 6 month T-bill, which was over almost 5.5% at the time, is down only about a point, less than a point, at 4.6%.
This is a long way of Terry saying, I was right, everybody.
No, because if I were a genius, and knew for sure,
right,
that I mean, I thought rates were coming down. I thought inflation was under control. But the idea of your chicken money is not just picking the tops and the bottoms in rates. It's staggering it, having liquidity. You don't want to lock your chicken money all up for 2 years. You're trying to keep maturities under a year, and you'll suffer with some lower rates.
Right.
But the point is, you've got it safe.
Terry Savage here, the money lady, and author of so many different things, including Social Security Horror Stories, Protect Yourself from the System. TerrySavage.com is where you can read all the columns. Got a question from the text line, Terry, that I think teases one of the columns that you are recently writing about. It's a house question. The sale of the home and the net is about $400,000 cash. This according to the 262. Do you place it into a new home and take and invest in the stock market, or mortgage a little bit more on the next house? Can I understand what they're asking here?
Whoa. Out of the blue. That's like going to the doctor and saying, I think I have a fever. I don't even have a thermometer, but I could tell I have a fever. What's wrong with me?
Okay.
There's not enough info. Look, if you sell your home and it's your principal residence for the reason I'm on top of this, you did during the break say to me, I got one on mortgages and selling a home. I just finished 2 days ago writing a column. It'll go into the Tribune. I think it'll make it in this weekend and go out on the wires around the country about your home and your mortgage and so forth. So let's just review the bidding here. If it's your principal residence two of the last 5 years, you can exclude $250,000 worth of gains if it's a joint return. $500,000 worth of gains.
Oh, so if you're married and you made $400,000 on the house.
If you're married filing jointly, then you won't pay any gain on the sale of the house.
Nice.
Now, in the olden days, and some people remember the olden days, you could roll over gains, but that doesn't happen anymore. You could, every 2 years, you could sell your primary residence and exclude $250,000 worth of gains. Now, it seems like that would be a lot, but that number has not gone up. I think it's at least a decade. And there are people who bought their homes in 1978 or something.
A lot more equity
like that,
than that, yeah.
And they have gains. So the one thing, you know, people debate how long should you keep records in your check registers and the old days of paper checks and bank statements. The one thing you must do the minute you buy a house is start a file box that says home improvements. Because 22 years from now, you will forget that you replaced the furnace the second year you bought it, then you replaced it again last year. Well, all the things, the roof, the plumbing, the remodeling for the bathroom, the kitchen, new countertops, all that stuff.
Cosmetic or necessary?
It's an improvement to the basics of the house.
Okay.
Now, you know, not painting.
Okay.
Yeah. But, yeah, new
major
carpeting
improvements,
or something.
Yeah.
Major improvements.
Electrical, stuff like that.
Oh, God. Anything like that. You want to keep the receipts, the files, the everything, because if your cost basis was $200,000 back in 1978, but over the years you put another $112,000 in with all that stuff, that raises your cost basis on which the gain is calculated. Okay, now this person, I'm strayed from the original question here. So what do you do with the money? That depends on your life right now.
Right.
Depends on your age and your stage in life. You're young, you had a house that you bought and you're going to have cash, and now you want to move to a bigger house because you have three kids now. Right now, the mortgage rates are coming down. I was talking to someone when I was out walking my dog who said, I just bought a new house. I said, did you lock in your mortgage rate? She said, it was a Wintrust. This is not a commercial, but
okay.
It's a fact. This was yesterday, the day before. And she said, I said, don't lock in your mortgage rate. The Fed's going to cut rates. She said, you won't believe this. I got 5.75% at Wintrust, and they told me they would drop it a quarter of a point if the Fed drops rates.
Wow.
Okay.
That's
and
good.
I went, whoa, Wintrust.
Doesn't happen always.
That on our lunch. So the point is, you may want to mortgage this house. You asked, should I put it in the stock market? This isn't speculating money, but if you haven't been saving in an IRA or whatever, you might want to look at that, your retirement savings. If you're a young family, you might want to take some of those profits and put it in Bright Start, the 529 college savings plan for each of your children to grow tax-free for college. So that's why I couldn't answer that. But number one, know the tax consequences of selling your house, $250,000 on a single return, $500,000. Up from your cost basis, which includes improvements. That's the exclusion. Mm-hmm. And number two, this is a perfect time to think about how do you want your life to go? If you're older, are you going to buy into a senior residence? Maybe, maybe not, because as we learned, those buy-ins are not guaranteed buyouts at some point in the future, but maybe it's the right move for you. So there's all kinds of considerations.
Right. And I think that's always a thing with the text line. Add a couple more details to help Terry out to figure out age, you know, kids, what's your situation? And maybe this one will be a similar one. But the 219 wants to know, I'm wondering, is it ever wise to cash in a life insurance policy and invest the cash value instead? I guess that depends, again, on age and other things.
Okay, so I've been hearing a lot of those commercials. I mean, I hear them all the time. I listen to us, but I listen to TV and other things, too. And I hear in the background, she doesn't know she's sitting on a gold mine. Yes, right.
Even a term policy.
Of $100,000. Look, you bought life insurance for a reason, and that reason may have dissipated. Maybe it was to pay off your mortgage. You figured you'd do that in 20 years, that's done. Do you still, or does the beneficiary really is the question.
Do they need it?
Still need the money if something happens to you. And if they do, then you keep paying on it. Number two, when you sell your policy, two things happen. You're giving somebody else an insurable interest in your life. You got to watch out for banana peels. Because someone else now owns a life insurance policy and benefits. Now, they discount the expected use of the money that they're paying you over the what they expect your remaining life expectancy will be. I mean, you have somebody betting against you, basically.
Right.
It's one thing to have God making decisions, but
you don't think they're out there laying the banana peel in front of you.
It's
a karma thing.
I think so. But typically, when they're going to make you a cash offer for your policy, they've calculated the money factors, the use of the money, the interest rates, and so on and so forth. They're not dumb. So it depends on, A, do I still need, or does my beneficiary still need the insurance? And B, how badly do I need the cash?
Yeah.
And yeah, I know that I'm not getting full value, but I won't be around to get it anyway if I die.
Exactly.
So maybe I want it now.
Terry Savage, the money lady. And we have looked up and confirmed that South America is east of Atlanta. You were looking at the map, Terry.
I wonder what we do during the break.
Yes.
I went, wait, really? Wait.
Yeah, okay. We were going through those random facts. You wanted to mention something about the Fed.
Speaking of facts. So we are all sitting here because we know that a half hour from now or less, we will know the Fed's decision. It will cut rates a quarter, a half a percent. The market will react. Then the Fed chairman will have his press conference and everybody try and read the tea leaves. Does he see one or two more rate cuts? Would there be one in November right after the election? Would there be one in December? And the markets go crazy. I'm not too young to remember the days when the money supply numbers were announced and the markets would
M2.
Go wild. M1, yeah. M2, whatever the numbers are. So this is just a kind of a thing. It's
okay.
A thing. Okay. But there is underlying this. So I want to mention this. I've mentioned it before, and this fact is up on under my columns. I put a special column up, and it's about, is the Fed political?
Is the Fed political?
Is the Fed political? So I have a little post up there from 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, Fed and election year politics. And here's a fact. Since 1980, the Fed has either hiked or cut rates in every single election year, except 2012, when rates were at zero. Do you all remember that?
Mm-hmm.
And the economy was still reeling from the financial crisis. So they always do something in election years. And guess what?
What?
The Fed...
Oh, back up. You're away from the microphone now,
okay.
Terry.
Sorry. The Fed cut rates in 5 election years and hiked in 5 election years.
So half and
this
half.
This is some research from J.P. Morgan Asset Management. Number one, it's not like they can't act in an election year. And number two, half the time they raise rates, half the time they cut rates. It's not linked to whatever political party was in power.
In fact, we want them to act in election years if they have to. We want them to do what they have to do.
We want them to do what they think is right. And they were a little late in raising rates, and then they had to get going to catch up with inflation. And they took a lot of blame for that whole transitory thing 4 years back. And now they've seemed, I'm standing here with my fingers crossed, seem to have managed to slow the economy without throwing tons of people out of work. And deal with inflation without causing a recession. And, you know, God bless them. Let's hope they do it right. Whatever they do it for the benefit of the economy.
I'm going to say something controversial. It was transitory. Okay, let's go to David.
They know that.
On the phone line. Hello, David. You had a question for Terry?
I did.
What do you got?
Can you hear me okay?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Hi, Terry. So my situation is a little bit unique in the sense that we, my brothers and I, there's three of us, basically inherited a house from my father and my mother. It's a paid off. Everything's fine with the house. It was in a trust. But unfortunately, Dad liking to take care of things before he passed, because we found out he had cancer and he passed last year, he did a quick claim deed for all of us to be on.
Oh, we just dropped David. What did he say? Maybe on the deed?
Okay. That's so trouble. Watch this. No.
Okay.
When you inherit, it should have stayed in the trust. It would have been easier to distribute the money.
Mm-hmm.
But there will, first of all, the value of the house, I don't care if you bought it in 1978 for $212,000, and now you, the three brothers, are going to sell it. That's why I presume where this question was leading, mm-hmm. for $800,000, okay? The value of the house, your new cost basis under the current tax laws, is the value on the date of death. So as long as you sell within 3 to 6 months, 8 months after the date of death, you will not have any capital gains tax. It's an inheritance. You will have to pay off the brokerage costs. There may be some estate things, not estate taxes, but out of that money, if he owed money, if there was a mortgage or anything else, I think he said it was paid off. I didn't hear all
yeah,
that.
Yeah, it was. And we got David back on the line. Okay. We're answering your question, David.
Okay, David. So I'm just guessing you're wondering about the tax implications. Number one, your cost basis is the value on the date of death. So if you're selling a few months after the date of death, that's just a distribution from an estate. There's no estate taxes. You each get a third of it, presumably.
Even if their names were on the house? Does that change things?
Oh,
yeah, so
he did die with.
I moved in 3 years ago to take care of them because they're in their 80s and I was helping them. And so basically made it my residence with them.
Yep.
So even after Dad passed, I'm still considered resident in the house. Now, my concern is, okay, the taxes. Yeah, we shouldn't have taken it out of the trust. We found out too late. But now that I have the house, it's in our name, including my own, and it is my residence, is there some loophole or something that I can do to maybe stay here longer or some other, put it in my own trust,
okay,
and still bypass that tax,
okay,
issue?
I'm going to tell you where to search for this because I'm not going to give you this advice. Here's number one to everyone listening out there. Do not sell your house just before you die, because you lose that step up in basis for your heirs.
Yep.
Okay? I mean, if you have to sell it to pay for the nursing home care or whatever, but do not, as a general rule, sell your house and realize that gain. You need to find an IRS enrolled agent. You need a really competent tax advisor to see exactly how that house was titled. You also need to discuss with your brothers. Let's say the house is worth $300,000 and each of you is supposed to get $100,000 from the sale of it. You have to figure out whether your brothers are going to say, that's okay, you just live there, we don't need the $100,000 each, or what kind of a deal you might be able to make with them, whether you can refinance the house. You really need some very specific
yes,
tax advice. And so I'm going to let you consult a tax advisor. And if you, I can't remember the website, but if you Google IRS enrolled agents, those are the super agents that can deal with a complicated question like this, not just the local office of H&R Block that opens up in March.
Okay. You sound good, David?
Sounds great. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. That's a complicated thing. That sometimes people want to put their kids in the name of the house and all that.
Always
and then
a mistake to
always
sell a house, a highly appreciated asset like a house, in anticipation of death.
Leave it in the trust. But I'm sorry for your loss, David, of course. I'll tell you what. We'll put a pause on this conversation. A lot of texts coming in. We're going to try and do maybe, you want to do a little rapid fire, Terry, in a little
absolutely
bit?
Absolutely. Let's do that.
We'll do that after we get a look at the Wintrust Business Minute. Here's Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. A new ranking puts the University of Chicago Booth School of Business and Northwestern University's Kellogg School of Management in two of the top three spots. The schools finished number 2 and number 3, respectively, in the Bloomberg Businessweek Best Business School Rankings. The list highlights the best full-time MBA programs. Kellogg is up 4 spots over last year. Booth is in the same slot. Stanford University came in at number 1. Dartmouth and University of Virginia round out the top 5. Bloomberg compiles the rankings with the help of surveys of graduating students, recent alumni, and companies that recruit MBAs. A medical supply company is expanding its downtown Chicago office footprint. Northfield-based Medline Industries has reportedly signed a new lease for 161,000 square feet at the Merchandise Mart. Cranes reports that's an increase of about 110,000 square feet. The company's lease will run through 2036. Medline Industries has been mulling an initial public offering that could value the company at $50 billion. That IPO could happen next year. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Let's get the business of food with the great Steve Alexander.
Yeah, thank you. And we continue with National Farm Safety and Health Week with a survivor.
I had my 70th birthday on March the 3rd, and I got run over by the tractor on March the 4th.
What happened then is the rest of the story, which we will hear after I thank the Chevy Silverado for sponsoring us today. There has never been a better time to put a Silverado in your toolbox. Find out how at ChevyDriveChicago.com. Okay, John Moody, a farmer in Crockett, Virginia.
I was going to feed the cattle, and I had a round hay bale on the front of the tractor and a round hay bale on the back of the tractor. And I get off and go over and open the gate to go into the field. And when I turned around to get on the tractor, here comes the tractor. When I went to jump on the tractor, the back wheel caught my right leg and pulled me under and ran over me.
Yeah, tractors are the number one cause of injuries on the farm.
I thought I was paralyzed. I couldn't move either one of my legs.
But the gate to the pasture was open.
And the cattle were coming. I was afraid they was going to all get out in the road. So I crawled over and got the gate shut. And then I just laid there in the ditch for a while.
There was no traffic on that country road that time of day. He couldn't move, couldn't call for help.
I don't have a cell phone.
So?
I just laid there for about an hour. I knew sooner or later the mailman would come.
I said, John, are you okay?
Alan Dix has been delivering John's mail for 18 years.
He said, no, the tractor ran over me.
That tractor did a number on John.
Well, I broke my right leg in two places. I fractured my pelvis in three places.
After 15 days in the hospital, he went home, and neighbors did what neighbors do.
I had a couple of neighbors that fed my cows till spring. I had a lot of people, you know, brought us food and stuff. And I had one neighbor that had built a ramp in front of the house so I could get in on the wheelchair.
John recovered. He's doing fine. Alan Dix was honored with the U.S. Postal Service Hero Award.
Yeah, wouldn't have been any different if any other person would have come by.
Those mail carriers quite often are a lifeline.
Yeah, we're aware of things that, you know, are you being nosy? Well, maybe a little bit, but we can kind of do a wellness check there just to make sure people are okay.
And he still sees John on his daily route. National Farm Safety and Health Week.
Don't do what I did.
On the food calendar, it's National Cheeseburger Day. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
It's time for the money lady. Got a few more minutes left with Terry Savage. Terry, you have a finger up. I know you want to say something.
Remember I mentioned someone needed some really expert tax advice?
Yes.
They needed an enrolled agent. So just go Google Illinois Society of Enrolled Agents, ISELSEA.org, Illinois Society of Enrolled Agents. And you can click on Find a Tax Expert. So if you really need something for something complicated like that was.
I just want to point out, we've had a couple agents text us from
H&R really?
Block
okay.
Who are enrolled agents as well.
Oh, fine. That's what I mean. I just didn't want you to go to a storefront where it's somebody who's there and you don't find them afterwards. This is going to be a process.
So ask them if you want to go to the big box.
But what you want is an enrolled agent.
Right.
Yes, and there are plenty of great enrolled agents at H&R Block.
Okay. Just want to make sure we got that. All right. You ready for a rapid-ish
fire?
But why don't we start with a question on the phone line?
All right.
All right, Jeff, we're trying to get a bunch of them here in the last few minutes. What do you got, Jeff?
Hi, Terry. I've just had a quick question. I've been contributing to a Roth IRA, and 2024 is 8,000. I'm over 50. Trying to find out, I haven't worked much this year because I was a sole caregiver for my mother who passed away. And now I had some money come back from the IRS, and I want to put some money into the mm-hmm. Roth, and I know you have to have earned income. I'm trying to reverse engineer and figure out what my minimum earned income would have to be in order to put $8,000 into 2024.
You'd have to have $8,000 worth of earned income.
If
you have $5,000 worth of earned income, you could put $5,000 in. If you have $12,000 worth of earned income this year, you can only put $8,000 over age 50.
So
One last question on the Roth. I have a friend who's been trying to convince me to get out of the Roth and roll that over into a 401k.
No. For a million reasons, no. Just hang on to your Roth IRA. You'll be glad you did.
Thank you very much. You guys are awesome. Have a great day.
Thanks, Jeff. Very good stuff. 262, my wife and I are both retired. Stepson's going through a divorce, wants to borrow $30,000 from our retirement fund. Good idea.
Just say no. That stepson will find his own way in life. He doesn't need money to split up with his about-to-be ex-wife. Your retirement funds are sacred. You worked all your life. You raised your kids. You do not owe them anything. Make a revocable living trust. Leave it to them, whatever's left after you die. I hope there's money left over, but I hope you live a long life and don't need to use it for health care or other expenses.
331, please ask Terry, would it make sense to close a traditional IRA, it's about $30,000, earning less than 1%, and open a CD with 5% with that money? That's Barb in Batavia.
Okay, Barb, you're not closing that IRA. You have it in a terrible place. Why would you earn only 1%? Yeah. You can roll it over directly to, go to Wintrust. They'll give you a lot more than that on a one-year CD for your IRA. But do a direct rollover. Don't take the check. Just walk in and ask for a banker, and they'll handle the whole thing for you. Do a rollover. Or call 1-800-FIDELITY or 1-800-VANGUARD. Nobody should be earning only 1%. In your IRA, but don't take the money out and pay taxes on it.
312 says, can you ask Terry, I have an IRA. Can I take money out to pay up my mortgage? I owe about $250,000 on my mortgage. I'm 59, so probably 59 and a half and eligible to pull out. And my mortgage rate right now is 6%.
Wait, don't do that. First of all, you want to keep your money in your IRA growing tax deferred. You will pay taxes later in life when you take it out. You want to keep it growing as long as possible. Make sure that you are now invested a little more conservatively inside your IRA than you were when you were 45 or 50 because you're closer to retirement. You've got a 6% mortgage. That's not a bad rate. Rates are just about to fall below 6%. If you're still working, and probably in about 6 or 8 months, you'll get a 5.25% mortgage and it might pay to refinance. But keep your IRA growing. If you take it out, you pay taxes. And why do that?
847, Treasury Direct Account. I've had problems setting up my account because I set it up as an individual and not a joint account with my wife. I had to open up a brand new account with the bank, just my name, and a medallion guarantee on the Treasury Illinois Society Direct form. I don't know what that is, but I sent it in a month ago. I haven't heard anything from Treasury Direct. Does it take that long to process?
Oh, yeah, they're really messed up there. But go to terrysavage.com, post your question. I'll respond to you by email. Then you can email me back with your name, address, and everything else. And I have a really good buddy inside Treasury Direct who fixes this stuff for me pretty fast.
Company I worked for starting in October offering Roth, no company match. Right now I do 20% of 401k with a company match of 4%. Was told I should stay in the 401k for 4% and Roth for the other 16%. Oh, they're trying to get the match at least on the 401k, not the Roth.
First of all, a match is free money. I don't know if these are the same company and they don't match the Roth because that's an accounting nightmare. So, you should get the maximum that you can for the match. And then if you have excess capacity, put that into the Roth portion.
For people that don't quite understand what we're saying.
Some companies now give you a 401k where part of it is a traditional deductible contribution and part is a Roth after-tax contribution, and there's an annual limit that the IRS sets up of how much you could put away. But these companies have an accounting nightmare if they try to match your after-tax contributions with what would be a taxable contribution to your Roth. So they don't match the Roth, but you really want to get the free money match. That's rule one. Get the free money match from your company.
So if your company matches 4%, do the 4% there. Do exactly what the guy's doing.
And then if they say, you could really contribute more because the annual limits are such and such, please put more away, yes.
Whatever you can.
I never heard anyone complain about having saved too much money in retirement.
312. Eligible for Medicare December 1st. Does Terry still recommend Plan G?
Yes.
Do this in a minute.
Oh, yeah. We're entering Medicare season. I'm actually talking about creating a little video of how to sign up for Social Security and how to sign up for Medicare. Here it is. When you're eligible for Medicare, sign up 3 months before. But if you have company paid insurance and they don't require you to sign up and if you have a health savings account at your company. Do not sign up for Medicare at 65 because you can no longer contribute to a health savings account, even if you only sign up for Plan A. But you need the insurance, you're 65, you don't have it at work, you do not want to take Medicare Advantage. I'm going to get raked over the coals for the next 3 months. I'm just very firm on this. You'd like traditional Medicare and a supplement, go to Medicare.gov to search. Go to qualified insurance agents, not Advantage, where they limit and control your health care, but the best supplement available, most expensive, is Plan G. If you can afford it, you want traditional Medicare, a supplement, and Part D, which is prescription drugs.
Terry Savage, you're the best. You're going to stick around. You'll get a quick react after the Fed.
Let's see what they say.
All right.
Your money on WGN. The Federal Reserve says it's cutting interest rates for the first time in more than 4 years. The central bank's cutting rates by half a point. Interest rates had remained at their highest level in over two decades since July of last year, but they'll be coming down and the market's going up. The Dow up 206 right now, 0.5%. 41,812. S&P 500's up 34, about 0.6%. 5668. NASDAQ up 145, about 0.8%. 17,773. I'm Bob Kessler, WGN News. Next news when it happens. Next scheduled news at 1:30 on the John Williams Show with John Hanson.
And Terry Savage, the money lady, sticking around. Yes, yeah, she did for that 50 basis point. Both you and I kind of did a little ooh.
Yeah, it was a sort of a surprise. You think the Fed is trying to stay away from politics, though, as we reported earlier, every election year they either raise or cut rates. Interestingly, the cut of 50 basis points was nearly unanimous. Only one dissenter wanted 25, an indication that the Fed does see the economy slowing, is concerned about losing jobs in this economy, and not worried too much about inflation. So 50 basis points should satisfy everyone, and there will be calm until they meet again in November and December, when we will go through this all over again.
Do you think that the fact there is no meeting next month contributed to them going to 50 as opposed to 25-25?
They have made a statement with this cut. It's apolitical. It is their evaluation of the strength of the economy and the need for the Fed to literally catch up what's already going on in the financial markets, which is lower rates. So that will now, and for all of you savers, you can expect that CD rates will now start falling. You can expect that when you roll over your T-bills, they'll fall a little bit because that follows the Fed central bank decision. But you could also expect, if you're out there getting a mortgage, that rate should drop. And if you've locked in, you might want to go back to your lender next week and renegotiate at least a quarter point lower rate.
TerrySavage.com, the money lady. Terry, thanks for sticking around a few extra minutes.
For sure.